Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to captain.
Join Jan Shaw, updating current events as only Jan can.
Library computer, data being received.
Produced by CosmicReality.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, empoweredmanifestation.com, Facebook and YouTube, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw, US-UK Patriot on Telegram, and Truth Social, Success Alchemist. Today is the 4th of February 2023, and the title of today's show is How Did We Get Here? Trust the Plan. And so I'm going to take a slightly different approach to this week's show because I want to take more of a helicopter view of what's going on. It will link to some of the things that have been happening this week and earlier, but it's more of a kind of a historical look, maybe even a philosophical look, who knows. I was giving it some thought this week as to how so many people were willing to be controlled, particularly over the last 2 or 3 years with the COVID scamdemic. And, you know, generally speaking, this culture has been one promoted by the mainstream media of keeping people in fear and also lacking control in their emotions and emotional responses to people. And I want to give you a couple of examples of this. You know, they've deliberately created germ phobia in people. And I think this started a couple of decades ago, maybe more, when parents were being indoctrinated not to let their children get dirty. And I saw this happen in England, particularly in the cities, where parents fell for this concept of, you know, keep your children squeaky clean because otherwise they're going to pick up all these germs and diseases and everything else. They didn't let their children play in the dirt or pet animals. You know, I grew up very much in the suburbs to a degree, but also very much connected to farming. My brother actually went to agricultural college, and one of the families connected to us was actually a farmer. And when I was very young, we would go to the farm and we'd climb up into the hay barn. And my first photo was of me sitting on a huge Shire horse. At that time, they were still using Shire horses on the farms. You know, it was before everything got taken over by tractors. And I was this little tot sat up on this huge horse. And, you know, it really, I think that started my passion for horses. But also, you know, when I was perhaps a little bit older, about five, I think, I'd started school by that time. But we lived in this small village in Norfolk, not far from Norwich. And because my eldest brother was so into farming, he would go over to the next door farm to, you know, get some experience of it. He was probably 5 years older than me, so about 10 years old. But I would go over there as well. And in my passion for horses, which I didn't, you know, I didn't own a horse or a pony or whatever, I made friends, kind of tamed one of the young heifers. And I actually rode this heifer, and I'd be going around the farmyard, and there were these open drains and having little feats several times, I managed to put my foot down this drain and ended up going home with a leg covered in slurry, which didn't go down very well with my mother, as you can imagine. But there was no kind of, oh my God, you can't go to the farm because if you touch one of the animals, you know, you're going to pick something up that's going to kill you. And I used to love going to see the calves, and I would put my hand out and the calf would suck it as if it was suckling, you know, and it didn't have any teeth really to speak of at that point. So there was never any danger of getting bitten. But it was a lovely way to grow up. And then when my children were small, every spring we would go to a local farm to see the lambs. And we'd see all these lovely lambs in with their mothers. And, you know, we'd stroke the lambs and pet the lambs. And then not long after this, we were being told that if you pet lambs, you know, you're going to pick up some nasty disease. So if you think about it, this has been a concerted propaganda exercise to create this germ phobia. And I just want to mention something that I remembered when I was, you know, thinking this through, was when Obama repealed the Smith-Mundt Act, Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. So let me just read you a short passage from this article I found when I did a search. And this is River City's Reader. This is going back to 2019, talking about the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. There's a high probability that you've never heard of the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, SMA, which would comport with not knowing or caring about the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. Both these laws are critically important and impact your lives directly, so time to get up to speed. The Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, SMMA, was buried in the 2012 National Defence Authorization Act for good reason, because it repealed the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act. The Smith-Mundt Act is also known as the US Information and Education Act, which authorised the State Department to engage in propagandising foreign countries as a form of public diplomacy. The SMA established that via the Broadcasting Board of Governors, BBG, Voice of America, VOA, and Radio Free Europe, RFE, the US State Department and Office of Public Affairs were authorized to disseminate propaganda to foreign publics, but were strictly prohibited from releasing that same propaganda in America for public consumption. Put simply, our government was permitted to lie to people in other countries, but not to us here at home. This prohibition was lifted in 2012, when the SMMA was signed into law by President Obama, allowing the same propaganda disseminated by our government to foreign publics to now be released in the US for the very first time. And yet, our government is also now allowed to create propaganda tailored specifically for US public consumption, using any media as it sees fit, while remaining anonymous as the source of the material being reported. This covert activity by our government's State Department, Public Diplomacy, and Public Affairs Department can only occur with corporate media's full complicity, for which it is well compensated thanks to the tax dollars appropriated by the SMMA. It means that when our government's propaganda is presented to we the American people, as news, we are none the wiser that it is scripted, orchestrated, and fully supported with the invisible USBS, United States bullshit, seal of approval. The SMMA provides for ample funding for US propaganda programming, incentivizing the corporate media cartel to partner with the BBG for a new source of revenue to backstop its operational budgets that have been declining due to years of increasingly low ratings, social media competition, loss of relevance, and the public's growing loss of confidence in media's reporting veracity, regardless of political affiliation. The SMMA promotes unholy alliances between the US State Department and America's corporate media that unbinds reporters and news departments from the solemn responsibility to verify information. Traditional, in quotes, news, based on reliable, verifiable, fact-based evidence, is slowly giving way to news with the letter Z, an ersatz form of information dissemination via broadcasting and or publishing that enjoys specialized immunity for libel, misinformation, false or fraudulent information, misrepresentation, and anything else previously prohibited by the SMA. If serving a national security purpose, the media cartel has a government-sanctioned license to lie. This certainly explains a lot of news with a letter Z masquerading as legitimate news these days. Revoking the restrictions once enforced under Smith-Mundt has opened the floodgates on active former and retired federal government defense, military, and intelligence agency personnel, hiring on as experts by broadcast and cable news networks in an attempt to bring gravitas to what amounts to no more than a continuum of guided speculation. Consumers of news can't deny the departure from traditional fact-based news as of 2012. What else explains the growing amount of grossly unsubstantiated and or blatantly biased reporting, the unprecedented anonymous or hearsay sourcing, or the glaringly irresponsible lack of citing sources at all? Just two decades ago, such unprofessionalism in journalism would have been a career breaker and rendered complicit news organizations moot. Generally speaking, however, there remains a stubborn residual belief among Americans that media would never be permitted to knowingly deceive people. There are laws against such abhorrent conduct, aren't there? Media broadcasters would lose their broadcasting licenses, and publishers would lose their standing as providers of news that is reliable or trustworthy. More importantly, our government is forbidden to propagandize Americans using deception, especially via a free press, right? Wrong. Grasping the importance of the SMMA in undermining America's free press, its impact on our government's culture and socio-economic structure as a free society cannot be understated. So I'm not going to read the rest, but you've got the general gist. And of course, you know, with the rise of social media, where there has been, or at least seemed to be, more freedom of speech on there and actual reporting of the truth and the facts rather than the propaganda, of course, that led to the rise of the fact checkers, which contradict or discredit or remove anything that doesn't go along with the official narrative. And we've seen this extremely obvious in the amount of censorship that there's been, particularly since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. And also, I think, even before then, if you think about all the propaganda that was put out about Trump from the point of him announcing that he was going to run for president, and of course all the way through his first term as president, and this ridiculous promotion of the senile Joe Biden as being this wonderful uniter, and he's going to maintain democracy. I mean, he's one of the front runners, or at least his puppet masters are, in terms of selling a completely false narrative all the way through his administration, through his presidency. So, you know, this is kind of a background to how the people who are not awake have been brainwashed into almost a constant state of fear. And of course, the media is always fear-mongering, putting out these stories of that are negative and, you know, all through COVID have been, you know, reporting on all these deaths that have been happening to scare people into staying indoors, being in lockdown, and of course, ultimately, lining up for boosters. We're seeing people even now still walking around in masks. And despite all the news that's been released, even some of it in the mainstream media now, about the injuries from the vaccines and of course this epidemic of sudden deaths, people are still saying, oh well, you need to get the booster, and we're still seeing that pushed and pushed on the mainstream media and by celebrities as well. Also think about the way that the media, and I'm not just talking news media now, I'm talking, you know, Hollywood, TV shows, particularly these reality TV shows like Jerry Springer, not that I've never ever watched it, but, you know, they were encouraging emotional outbursts. They developed this normalization of complete lack of emotional control, where you would get people absolutely screaming at each other in the studio over whatever it was that they disagreed about. And we're seeing this more and more out on the streets. The number of reports of brawls happening in places like Walmart and on public transport and on the streets and even in schools. I mean, this week there was a report of a 9-year-old girl being attacked by much older boys on the school bus. And we've also seen a teacher being assaulted by, I think it was a grade 9 student at school, and she's been hospitalised with a broken leg and other injuries. You know, it's developing this lawless society. And in the same way, we've got this development of the victim syndrome. You know, the easily offended are the result of the same indoctrination. The way children are and have been brought up or educated, if you can call it that, indoctrinated, and given participation trophies so they don't get upset if they don't win something, has led to generations with entitlement syndrome, a selfishness that has no consideration for other people. And people are being led by the nose to follow the latest trend like climate change and transgenderism, normalising pedophilia and drag shows for children. And parents are sleepwalking into it. It's just like the zombie apocalypse. You know, there's these photos of children with these obscene drag shows. I mean, they're not even as drag shows used to be, which was more of a comedy thing. Now it's absolute pornographic material. It's appalling. And, you know, this is all been caused by this dropping and dropping of moral standards, normalising perverse behaviour. So, and we've seen it in movies. You know, when I was growing up, you had to be 18 to see an X-rated movie in the UK. And yet the type of material that was in there is far less explicit than some of the materials, some of the content of these movies that children are allowed to see. You know, it's like the totalitarian tiptoe. This has been the, you know, the controlling of moral standards tiptoe, so that there's much, much more degeneracy out in plain sight. So it's really concerning. But I think what's happening is people are starting to wake up more and more. They're actually seeing this, and we're seeing it with parents at the school boards objecting to pornographic material, to CRT, to this indoctrination that's going on. And I don't have statistics, but I'm pretty sure there's been a huge rise in children being homeschooled. Interestingly, Q talked about this in Drop 4957. He said, or they said, I should say, Q said, how do you control generations of a populace? 50 years of conditioning, 50 years of propaganda, 50 years of lies. And he's referring to them calling these riots in 2020 peaceful protests, riots, summer of love. And there is a quote that says, you know, if you repeat the lies often enough, people will believe it. And that's what we've seen happen, particularly, as I said, over recent years. Dr. Tess Laurie has an article along similar lines on her Substack. And her title is, Are We on Drugs or Something? How have we become so comfortably numb? My New Year's post on it, Emancipating Ourselves from Mental Slavery in 2023, has really got me thinking. How have we been duped into fearful compliance and servitude by governments that have two sets of rules, one for the rulers and one for us? How have we allowed the hierarchy exploiting you, T-H-E-Y, who are supposed to serve us, to relentlessly and systematically violate our human rights? Why have we accepted a ruling class, and how did we become so comfortably numb? Yes, you guessed it, the lyrics of Pink Floyd's famous song popped into my head today and inspired this piece. And it does have an excerpt, but I'm not going to play that, probably for copyright reasons as much as anything. But she does include some of the lyrics, which I'll read for you. Hello, is there anybody in there? Just nod if you can hear me. Is there anyone home? Okay, just a little pinprick. There'll be no more pain. But you may feel a little sick. Can you stand up? I do believe it's working. Good. That'll keep you going through the show. Come on, it's time to go. When I was a child, I caught a fleeting glimpse out of the corner of my eye. I turned to look, but it was gone. I cannot put my finger on it now. The child is grown. The dream is gone. I have become comfortably numb. Had it been written in 2021, we would have thought Pink Floyd was singing about the COVID-19 injections. In a previous post, I shared my growing realization that mind control has been used by governments for as long as they have existed. In fact, mind control is the de facto meaning of the word government. To ensure that people follow orders, they need us to be living in fear and forever in debt. They also need us to be subdued, focused on the money, and disconnected from our dreams. A comfortable numbness makes us compliant and morally vulnerable. And I'd just like to inject a comment at this point about what she's saying, relating to keeping us forever in debt. I mean, if you think about it, we've got this culture of consumerism and commercialism, and you know, the kids have to have the latest iPhone, regardless of whether the phone needs to be replaced, you know, the latest gadgets, you know, the branded clothing and designer this and designer that. But an interesting thing that I noticed was this introduction of pushing virtually every child into a college education. And interestingly, it happened in parallel in the UK and the US, where suddenly, you know, everybody was to go to college. There used to be means tested grants in the UK. That was dropped. And of course, we know about the student level of student debt in the US. And many of these degrees were absolutely useless and didn't enable the graduates of the courses to get a realistic job. You know, the gender studies and media studies graduates really weren't able to step into any kind of job that would warrant the amount of money that they had gone into debt for to get these college degrees. So to me, that idea of trapping people in debt is so obvious. And of course, the rise of credit cards. When I was young, they didn't exist. You know, MasterCard and Visa, you could get personal loans, but to get a personal loan, this is in the UK, I don't know if it applied in the US as well, you had to be in a position to put down a deposit and for whatever it was you wanted the personal loan for, and you had to specify what that personal loan was for, and it would be assessed, it wouldn't just be thrown at you, you know? So this whole thing, this culture of debt has grown over the last decades as well. Now, I don't want this to sound too negative. What I'm trying to do is to really illustrate how this whole culture has developed or been developed deliberately over the last few years. So it explains why people were willing to be so compliant to all the diktats of the COVID era. So to continue with this article, our young people are the canaries in the coal mine of an out-of-control technological age, signposts of an anti-human system. One only has to look at our pale and defeated children walking into and out of school each day to note the increasingly younger target age of those working to break and control the human spirit. Have we silently acquiesced to being replaced by artificial intelligence with barely a whimper? The WEF's deluded scientist Yuval Noah Harari says that we hackable animals will need to be fed drugs and video games to be kept out of the way. However, with much of what this WEF gang say, it seems that the action is already in play, and in fact has been in play for some time. This is what keeps them so smug. So aside from dangerous injections, what other drugs have they liberally deployed? Well, alcohol is a big one. Not only is it a hugely profitable government-regulated industry, it keeps us subdued and in a low vibrational state at best, and a vulnerable, depressed, violent and morally degenerate state at worst. Consider the slang terms for getting drunk, wasted, jarred, wrecked, for example, and it dispels any doubts about why a government seeking to keep its people enslaved would promote this addictive and socially destructive drug. Alcohol is the socially acceptable drug, the one that advertising has cleverly associated with togetherness and celebrations, such that many find it hard to imagine a wedding or a birthday without it. Then there are antidepressants, less freely available perhaps, but not by much. Prescriptions have been increasing year by year, with 8.32 million people in the UK being prescribed antidepressants in 21/22. In the US, 13.2% of adults over 18 were using antidepressants during 2015 to 2018. Disturbingly, these drugs are increasingly being prescribed to children, and overall, it's a market that's expected to grow and grow, despite the fact that these drugs carry known risks. No one knows this better than Kim Witsak, whose beloved husband Woody committed suicide under the influence of Zoloft, an antidepressant that his doctor had prescribed to help him sleep. Since this devastating loss, Kim has become what she calls an accidental advocate, campaigning for better drug safety. She helped get black box suicide warnings added to antidepressants in 2004 for children and extended to young adults in 2006. And I just want to interject here as well, because we've also been indoctrinated into craving drugs from Big Pharma. So many people have a complete reliance on pharmaceutical drugs, and even when they see an ad on TV which lists an absolute arm's length worth of adverse reactions, including death, they still rush off to their primary physician and ask for these drugs to be prescribed to them. It's just unbelievable. So continuing the article, a better way is not a bed of roses, or rather it is a bed of roses replete with thorns. If we truly want to free ourselves from enslavement, we must allow ourselves to feel the pain of our confinement and fully acknowledge the extent of suffering experienced by our fellow human beings. We must understand keenly how our disconnection from one another and our natural world has left us poor in spirit. It hurts, but with the pain comes the rekindling of the spirit and its inherent joy. Pain and ease, darkness and light, sadness and joy, that is life in its fullness. There is a better way. And this lady, Dr. Tess Laurie, is actually connected with the World Council for Health. I don't know if she founded it. It doesn't have the bio in here, but when she's asking for donations, she says that all the proceeds would go to the World Council for Health, and is obviously on a mission to, you know, go against the big pharma conglomerate. So I've been seeing on Twitter some tweets from people saying that they seem to have lost hope. You know, they're seeing only the dark side of things here. So that's why I also wanted to balance this with what I believe is really strong signs that the White Hats are in control and that we must continue to trust the plan. I mean, one of the things that Trump has recently announced, and it's been commented that he sounds like he's still the president, but in his campaign for president 2024, he pledges to end left-wing gender insanity on day one. And of course, all the Democrats are up in arms about this, calling him transphobic and all the rest of it. But and I'm not going to read that article because there's more I want to cover on trusting the plan. But, you know, he's actually raising all the things that the Democrats and the, to an extent, the rhinos have been pushing, as I was saying earlier, about the normalizing of this and the real pushing of transgenderism on very young children. It's really deplorable. Now, one of the things that does concern me is I'm seeing quite a lot of MAGA supporters turning against Trump. And I think it's been sparked by this Trump versus DeSantis drama that's been going on. I mean, Trump has been calling out DeSantis. In the main, DeSantis hasn't retaliated. But the question is this so-called rivalry between Trump and DeSantis a ploy by the rhinos to divide the Republican vote so the Dems win, the Democrats win? There have been reports that DeSantis has actually in the past supported some of the agendas that appear to be globalist. But on the other hand, DeSantis is introducing in Florida very similar policies to the ones that Trump is also advocating for in his re-election campaign. And in X22's report, he actually believes that Trump and DeSantis may well be working together as part of this plan. And in terms of, you know, should it be Trump or DeSantis that has the Republican nomination for president? Again, X22 points out that really Trump is the only candidate for the 2024 presidential election, assuming things aren't resolved before then, he's the only logical candidate because he has the goods on the deep state traitors. He has it all. And he also has the plan to defeat them, not only nationally, but globally. And I'm actually going to read a couple of articles about that in a moment. He is not a politician. He is a statesman, and he's on the warpath. And I also need to remind people that they're judging his actions at face value. whereas we're actually in a 5D chess game. And this is Sting Operation Reality. You have to appear that you're one of the enemy in order to get evidence and reveal the truth. You have to set the bait in order to trap them. And so, you know, we really have to step back from this and take much more of a helicopter view and use our critical thinking and analytical capabilities and discernment as well. So let's look at a few of the recent events and look at it from the point of view of what would the purpose of these be if the White Hats are in control. And we must remember that Biden isn't Biden. And I was also comparing some photos of Hunter Biden. The ones where he is in a photo with the real Biden before Biden was replaced by this puppet, and recent photographs where he is shown with the fake Biden, and there is a significant difference in his features. So to me, you know, both of them have been replaced. I'm not sure about Jill Biden. I haven't really looked at that, but you know, that perhaps is worth investigating as well. So let's look at this. You know, what have we had? We've had the classified documents that have been kind of trickled out to the public in terms of Biden having these documents in various different places, and he's supposedly being transparent, but he's been handled with kid gloves compared to Trump's raid by the FBI of Mar-a-Lago. Why are they coming out now is the question. And now we're seeing more links to the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop in terms of his having access to the contents of some of these classified documents. I covered a bit of that last week, I think. And what's with this Chinese balloon that's happened this week? You know, this idea of a surveillance balloon, you know, moving over the US, it was over Montana and it's been moving east. Is that a distraction? I don't know. Is it further proof that Biden is weak and a CCP puppet? The speculation that it could launch or possibly test an EMP attack, that's electromagnetic pulse, which would take out power supplies and electronic equipment. And Alex Jones has been speaking about this. And then this week, the end of the week, Hunter has in effect admitted that the laptop from hell is his. And the way he's doing this is to threaten legal action against people that have been sharing the contents. And this is from New York Post. Hunter Biden's legal threats have no merit and raise serious constitutional and political questions. And this was published on the 2nd, and it's by Jonathan Turley. I've covered articles by him before. Hunter Biden appears to have finally achieved clarity. Months after the Post's October 2020 reporting, Biden was warning reporters that his alleged laptop might be Russian disinformation, or it might be his. He seemed tortured by doubt in a 2021 CBS News interview. For real, I don't know. I don't have any idea. I have no idea whether or not. It now appears he does know for real. His lawyers sent letters Wednesday requesting investigations into figures associated with former President Donald Trump who have used information from the laptop. The first son's sudden shift to the offence follows a meeting of a legion of Doom of Democratic operatives reportedly planning attacks on potential witnesses against Hunter. At the same time, Biden agents are planning to create a large legal fund for the next stage. In a city where influence peddling is the leading industry, Hunter's plight could easily become a cause célèbre. Indeed, there hasn't been a greater sense of urgency or outpouring of humanity since the Cato-Kalin housing crisis. The letters to federal and state prosecutors seem to confirm the plan for a scorched earth strategy. The Biden lawyers accuse people using the laptop contents of possibly violating federal and state laws in accessing, copying, manipulating, and/or disseminating Mr. Biden's personal computer data. The Biden team is also threatening media that have covered the story, including Fox News, with defamation lawsuits. And it's asking the IRS to consider removing the tax-exempt status of groups that use the material, such as Marco Polo, a charitable organization run by Garrett Ziegler, in a letter copied to the agency's Criminal Investigation Unit chief. The letters raise serious constitutional and political concerns. Critics using publicly available material are allowed to reach their own conclusions about the implications of these files. The Biden team, for example, threatens a lawsuit against Tucker Carlson while demanding a retraction of false and defamatory statements. But Hunter Biden is a public figure who must shoulder a high standard for defamation of actual malice, requiring that a false statement be made with knowledge that it was false or with reckless disregard of whether it was false or not. Courts are highly protective of the exercise of opinion, particularly on subjects of great political significance like influence peddling. The laptop's legal status is also key. To all appearances, Hunter abandoned the laptop at John Paul Mac Isaac's Wilmington, Delaware computer repair shop. Now, I'm just going to summarise the rest because I do want to move on to another article. So the contract that Hunter Biden signed said that if he didn't pick up the laptop within 90 days after he was informed that it had been repaired, then the ownership would pass to John Paul Mac Isaac, the owner of the Mac repair shop. So his claims that the laptop was stolen is completely false and can't be substantiated. So the question is, why did this come out now? Well, what is it doing? It's because we're getting these revelations from the Marco Polo group about the contents of the laptop and the link between the emails and Biden, President Biden's classified documents that he's had for years, and during the time when Hunter was in league with these various foreign governments and foreign organizations while Biden was VP. And the other thing is, there is now no denial that this is Hunter's laptop, which also exposes these 51 ex-intelligence officers who signed this letter back in 2020 claiming that the laptop was Russian disinformation. So from a plan point of view, it's really exposing the illegality and the corruption behind this whole cover-up of the Hunter Biden laptop. And it's also confirming that as it is his, the collusion between Hunter and his father in terms of these foreign deals and the huge payouts that Hunter was receiving, which of course Biden has continued to deny, saying that he had no knowledge or involvement in Hunter Biden's businesses. So, you know, from a plan point of view, it's perfect. Now, I have two articles that I found that I wanted to share. I'm not going to have time to cover both of them, but I'll give a quick roundup of what the first one is, because the two are very much tied together. Before I do that, I just want to remind you of topics that I've covered in previous shows, which relate to devolution and also wartime presidency, which have very much supported the theory that Trump is still president and that he controls the military. Now, in this first article, and this is from Badlands Substack, And the title is Master and Commander. And in it, there is a video. It's not very long, but I don't have time to cover all of it or include all of it. It's a video featuring James Rickards, who I'm not familiar with, basically saying President Donald Trump is a genius. And I'm just going to play a little bit of this at the beginning.
Donald Trump, during his election campaign in 2016, spent a hell of a lot of time talking about China. Right. He was ridiculed for this. He was mocked for this. Most people who are not experts didn't even understand why he was talking about it. Somewhere in the periphery, people might have thought, well, he's talking about it because a lot of manufacturing jobs have gone to China.
Right.
But if you listen to some of his advisors, if you listen to some of the other people who talk about the threat that China poses to the rest of the world, economically more than anything, there are many more layers to it than that.
Right.
So lay that out for us.
Sure. Trump is a difficult to understand genius, and I look at the fact that he won in 2016. Of course, we're coming into the 2020 elections, and I predicted the Trump victory in 2016, so I'm in that business of predictive analytics. I have Trump as a strong favorite to win again. But one of the factors I look at his opponents, the media, the Democrats, the progressives, and I say, did they learn anything? Did they learn anything in 2016 so that they can do something different today and perhaps beat him? And so far the answer is no. They haven't learned a thing.
Well, they've doubled down on all the crazy cultural stuff that got them in trouble in 2016.
That's exactly right. They've doubled down. That's a good way to put it. But no sign at all that they've learned anything. But so I describe Trump's relationships with the media as the media are a herd of puppies, and Trump's the master with a red rubber ball. And he throws the ball, and all the puppies chase the ball. One of them fetches it and brings it back, and he says, very good. And he throws the ball over there, and they do the same thing. Meanwhile, he's doing serious stuff. So what's the ball? You know, Stormy Daniels, impeachment, collusion, Russiagate. These things are distractions, no substance to any of them. And the media keeps chasing them. Meanwhile, what is Trump actually doing? The largest tax cut in history. He is remaking the federal judiciary, appointing judges at an unprecedented rate, taking control of the courts. And it's from a list produced by the Federalist Society. They're very staunch, reliable conservatives. And they picked them in the early 40s because it's a lifetime appointment. So you'll be on the bench 40 years from now. The Trump judiciary is going to run the United States long after, well, at least after I'm gone, you guys are younger, but for maybe four decades or so in the future. The Trump owns the Fed. Trump came in, there were two vacancies on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. Why were there two vacancies? Well, Obama was so sure that Hillary was going to win that he didn't bother with the appointments. He said, well, I'll give them to Hillary. She'll appoint some strong hands. So Trump got two seats right off the bat. Then there were a couple of resignations. So that kind of went up to four seats. And then one more since then, plus promoting Jay Powell from a governor where he already was a governor before Trump to chairman. So Lael Brainard is going to end up as the only non-Trump appointee on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. She must feel like a hostage when she goes into the room. But the point is, so Trump owns the Federal Reserve. He's taking control of the judiciary. He's burning the Code of Federal Regulations, I mean, literally burning it down so you can actually have some freedom, and the largest tax cut in history, and confronting China, and that was your point, Constantine. So the press is chasing the rubber ball. He's doing big stuff. That's really going to be world historic. So as it relates to China, so...
So the key points to take in here are really related to Trump actually controlling the Fed. And the other key point that I want to cover as a prelude to the next article is Trump rolls the Fed into the Treasury. This was a massive story back in March 2020, right before Trump's presumed imminent re-election, but it wasn't talked about much in the media. I believe Trump used the pandemic the enemy launched on the world as the excuse he needed to roll the Federal Reserve into the US Treasury, which the president controls as part of the executive branch. And so basically, he was controlling the money supply rather than the Fed controlling it. That's a very, very short summary of the implications of that. Now, the title of that was Master and Commander. The second article is The Master Builder, a Coalition to Bring Down the Banks. And it says, before becoming president, Trump was known worldwide as a real estate mogul. He took over his father's real estate business in 1971 and renamed it the Trump Organization. He's constructed or restored some of the most iconic buildings around the world. Trump is a master builder. As incredible as these builds have been for Trump, he is now building something much more important, something truly monumental. It will be something that will not only be historical, but will affect the lives of potentially everyone on the planet. What is it? A new global financial system, one that is no longer controlled by the Rothschilds and a cabal of elites. A new system where the people of the world are no longer born into debt slavery. There's a reason Trump put a portrait of Andrew Jackson in the White House and compared himself to the president who successfully removed the central bank in America. Trump is going to remove these shackles that have held the people of the world down and open the door to financial freedom. He wants to give us an opportunity that we had not thought possible. He's going to give the power back to the people, which is what this war is all about. Some of our founders knew who the real enemy was, the hidden enemies that were more dangerous than the armies we would defeat to gain our initial freedom in this nation. These hidden enemies control governments and have used the United States to control the world, using both the Federal Reserve and our military since World War II. Trump now controls the Federal Reserve, as I explained in my previous article, and the military has been devolved so that Biden doesn't have control of the main functions of our military. And he refers to Patel Patriot's devolution series I mentioned earlier. So how do you remove a global debt system that has controlled and enslaved the world? How do you replace it with a system that offers true freedom, not just for countries, but for individuals around the world? Have you heard of the term controlled demolition? It's the process of bringing down an old skyscraper in order to replace it, while also trying to prevent damage to everything surrounding it. I believe that's what's happening right now, a controlled demolition of the global central bank debt system. But remember, this is a global war, not just a war in the United States. The entire world is enslaved financially, and it will take a coalition to remove this system. Was there a planned coalition? From an early Q post on November 11, 2017. What did POTUS receive while visiting China? Where did POTUS dine? What is the significance? What if China, Russia and others are coordinating with POTUS to eliminate the New World Order? Is China coordinating with Trump to eliminate the New World Order? I believe President Xi Jinping is allied with Trump. So what did Trump receive while visiting China? And according to CNN, Donald Trump will receive an honor in Beijing not granted to any US president since the founding of the People's Republic of China, official dinner inside the Forbidden City. I am going to summarize some of this as it's a pretty long article. The other thing that this reports on is saying that China had to find a channel through which to communicate with Trump. They found one such channel in his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who helped arrange an April summit between Xi and Trump at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. So he was trying to find a channel for secret communication. Why Jared Kushner? Kushner is much more than just a senior aide. He's been tasked with some of Trump's most important accomplishments happening behind the scenes. For example, we didn't know that Kushner was running Trump's campaign in 2016 behind the scenes until after the election. And it was Jared Kushner who negotiated the Abraham Accords peace deals. He also arranged other meetings between Trump and Xi Jinping. The article also mentions that it appears Xi Jinping is fighting his own deep state in China. And it mentions somebody arrested for corruption, and also Xi Jinping's predecessor was forcibly led away from the party congress. And I remember that as being quite recent. George Soros has been criticizing China or Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin alongside Trump. So obviously that indicates that they are not globalists, because of course George Soros is. And then it's mentioned that Trump is also allied with Putin. And it reminds us of that meeting in Helsinki where Putin handed Trump the soccer ball and basically said, "The ball is in your court." This meeting happened back in June of 2018, and I believe at that point the ball began to roll on the takedown of the central bank debt system. Putin was willing to do his part in the future, but he needed Trump to do some things first. How do you prepare the battlefield? In the game of chess, how do you maneuver your opponent into checkmate? The Rothschilds have lost control of the Federal Reserve and the dollar, so their power is now diminished and concentrated in one place, Europe. How do you weaken the deep state economically in order to bankrupt them? War has always been their most profitable venture, and now it has been used against them. The Ukraine war has now turned into a massive boomerang, but Trump needed to prep the battlefield ahead of time. The first thing he did was force the European countries in NATO to live up to their commitments and pay their share for their own national defence, especially Germany, which is the engine of the entire European Union. They have used the American military and taxpayers to subsidise their defence since World War II, which has also propped up their economy. At the same time, they are touting Russia as a worldwide threat and demonise Putin as a killer who must be confronted, while also accusing him of helping Trump win his 2016 election. Trump called their bluff by very publicly shaming them for not living up to their defence agreements and at the same time choosing to purchase around 60% of their energy from Russia, their supposed enemy. "We were actually subsidising all of Europe in order to benefit the European central banks that the Rothschilds control. But Trump put an end to it. No more free rides. Remember, the cabal originally wanted a war between the US and Russia. Trump killed those plans by forcing Europe to take responsibility for their own defence. NATO is now in a position, or in position, to be exposed as the puppet of the cabal that it has always been. I believe the war in Ukraine was planned ahead of time to happen after Joe Biden assumed office, and I believe it is going to accomplish several things. It will end the slaughter of Ukrainians of Russian ethnicity in the Donbass region. It will destroy the bioweapons labs and Nazi divisions within the Ukrainian military, and it will expose NATO's corruption and money laundering engine. But the war in Ukraine would do something far more important that would set the table for the impending collapse of the central banks. It was something both Putin, Trump and Xi expected and had planned for. After the special military operation kicked off, the enemy used sanctions against Russia, which were designed to damage the Russian economy. The global financial system has always been controlled, has been used as a weapon to subjugate nations for decades. The cabal decided to sanction Russian energy supplies, which represents a huge part of their economy. But instead of it hurting the Russian economy, these sanctions have boomeranged back on the European countries who are dependent on Russian energy. Putin wanted these sanctions to happen. Why? He and President Xi have been preparing for this moment for a long time. The whole reason for the emergence of the BRICS coalition is to counter sanctions by the global central bank system. They have been working for years to create an alternative to this global debt system that has been enslaving the world. We have reached the point where there is now an alternative to the enemy's system. One that is not under their control and offers a path to financial freedom." And it ends saying, "My next article will feature a deep dive into the BRICS coalition, what this new system will look like and what it will offer the people of the world. The BRICS are being laid for financial freedom. The best is yet to come." So I wanted to share all that because, you know, things are not all doom and gloom. I do believe the white hats are very much in control and are really exposing everything and also putting everything in place to develop or create a completely different financial system from the fiat system and the debt system and everything else that has been enslaving the world. So for those of you who have been feeling downcast, feeling that, you know, the black hats are still winning, just stand back and take a look at the bigger picture and see how all these different pieces are nicely fitting together. So that's all I have time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show, that you'll join me for another Cosmic Creating Show next Saturday. Thank you to Nancy Hopkins for producing and to Derek Condit for sponsoring Cosmic Reality Radio. Please visit his website at mysticalwares.com. So until next time, stay well, be safe, and bye for now.
You have been listening to Cosmic Creating with Jan Shaw, updating current reality, a production of CosmicReality.com.